as probably we all do. That wasn't supposed to be a funny joke there, John. You know, when I tell a funny story, you're supposed to laugh then, but when I'm trying to be open and I'm sharing my heart and deep thing, you're not supposed to laugh. Yeah. Reassuring that you've had some regrets as well. Is that right? We all do, don't we? One of my regrets in terms of my spiritual journey has not been reading the Gospels more. I don't know whether any else can relate to that. You know, you grow up. For me, I grew up in a home where I was surrounded by, Bible stories and things. And I suppose for many of those early years, I just focused on a lot of the Old Testament stories. You know, when you're young, stories about lions and Samson being strong and doing all these things. And they captivate young children, don't they? And of course, there were stories about Jesus. But for me, in my spiritual journey, I tended to find, particularly during my 20s and 30s, I spent a lot of time reading the letters of Paul, the Pauline epistles. I just loved those. I don't know what it was about them. I just really enjoyed getting into those. And if I'm honest, I probably only just dipped my toe into kind of the Gospels, really. But how crazy is that, really? You know, the whole focus of our attention is Jesus, isn't it? You know, and there's the four kind of snapshots of Jesus' life, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You know, so I've discovered again, I suppose, this last few years, the Gospels. And I just encourage you, I don't know how you read your Bible. I don't know, whether you work through it each year or how you go about reading and studying. But can I just encourage you to spend, 70% of your time in the Gospels, not in Leviticus. Yeah? Interesting though that book might be about some of those things. But we need to be focusing on the person and life of Jesus. So it's exciting to be looking at Mark at the moment. Now we're going to have to take a break. Obviously we're only on chapter 10 and we've got the Advent season coming soon. So we will be taking a break during December from Mark. But we will be back again as we lead up to Easter back into Mark's Gospel. So we'll read that in a moment. I don't know, obviously this next month is busy for many of us, and of course I suppose in our if you like everyday lives, it's going to be dominated by the election coming up on the 12th of December. Is that right? Does that ring a bell with anybody? Now you're probably interested to know what I'm going to vote. I'm not going to tell you. I'll tell you why I'm not going to tell you, because I don't know yet. I honestly don't know. I don't know whether you've been brought up your family's always been red, or your family's always been blue, or you've been yellow, or green, or what's all the other colours nowadays? I don't know. Or whether you even did anybody ever actually vote for Screaming Lord Sutch at all? Remember that strange guy who used to appear always at election times? Is he dead now? I don't know whether is he? My vote in history, if you look back, I've voted for everybody, I think. I haven't voted for Plaid Cymru or for the Scottish National Party, but I've probably voted for everybody else over the years, because I'll be honest with you, what I tend to do is to try and read the manifestos. Is that a good thing to do? You can't always trust what's in the manifesto, that it will come to pass, but I don't think we should just vote on, whatever our dad did or whatever our mum voted and stuff like that. We need a brain of our own, don't we? And you need to think carefully over this next month about the way we're going to vote. And it's not an easy thing. And probably after the 12th of December, if we had a little straw poll here and we said, put your hand up if you, we're not going to do this, but you put your hand up if you voted for Labour, there'll be a few of us who voted for Labour, some Conservatives, some Liberals. As Christians, I think it's quite hard, isn't it? To come. But one of the things that we're going to look at this morning is about the nature of leadership, about the nature of leaders. And one of the things we can do is take what we learned this morning and certainly pray for those people who are involved in the elections over this next month. I think it would be fair to say, I don't think I'm generalizing here, but I would say the majority of people who go into politics go in with good hearts. They go in with good intentions. They're people who, generally speaking, in their communities and their lives, have wanted to make a difference to other people's lives. Would it be fair to say that? They want to serve other people. There are career politicians who've been, you know, to all the private schools and educated, and they want to be, you know, involved in politics for whatever reasons they do. But I think the majority of people, everyday, normal people, would probably go into politics because they want to help other people. They want to make a difference in their communities and in their societies. And that's a good thing. As we all know, the problem with getting into positions of power is that power corrupts, doesn't it? That's the problem. When you have that enormous amount of influence and authority and power, and often as well, huge amounts of money to play with, money itself can be a corrupting influence, can't it? Money itself is not bad, but the love of money and the control of money can twist people and change people. And often then, as a result of that, conflicts start to come. I mean, today we're thinking about war, and all the conflicts of that. These were a few just interesting things about that, about to do with war that I was thinking of over this last week. You know, in the past 3,000 or so years of what we know of as human history, you know, there's only been about 200 years without war. That's incredible, isn't it? Out of the 3,400 years. People who've died in war. Just in the 20th century alone, just the last century, over 100 million people died. That's a lot of people, isn't it? In war, in that conflict, in that struggle that people have. By far the most costly war, of course, was World War II. Over 56 million people from different countries died just in World War II alone. 56 million people. It's not just the cost of human life as well and families and things, but it's just the financial cost. You sometimes think, what could we do with that money that goes into war? The Gulf War alone, as some of us remember, $76 billion. Just the Gulf War. Vietnam, which was even longer, wasn't it? Some of us can remember back in the 60s and 70s. $500 billion. The Vietnam War. Korean War, $300 billion. World War II, $3 trillion. World War II. You think of what we could have built in society with that amount of money. It's incredible. It's staggering, isn't it? So it behoves us to think about, you know, how we lead, not just in terms of our own families and our own communities, but in terms of nations and stuff. Because if we don't get it right, if we don't lead properly, then you end up with these kind of catastrophes and these kind of things that are going on. So, serious beginning. No jokes today, but you know, it's a serious day, isn't it? So it's not one for jokes, and it's important that we think about the nature of leadership today and a few other things as we go along. So Dan, thank you. Have you got those words? So if you've got your Bibles, this is from the Passion Translation. We'll just read. If you haven't, then just follow it on the screen. We're going to read from verse 32 to 45. Jesus and his disciples were on the road that went up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was leading them forward. The disciples were filled with wonder and amazement at his bravery, but those following along with them as well were very afraid. As they approached the city, he took the 12 aside privately and told them what was going to happen. I want you to know that we're going to Jerusalem. where the Son of Man, by the way, that expression there, it's used a lot throughout, particularly the Old Testament, but also in the New Testament. It was an expression that you find a lot in the book of Ezekiel and the book of Daniel. And it was about just the idea of a human being, of a man. And later on, as Jesus then comes along, he picks up that powerful kind of image that Daniel particularly used of the Son of Man and owned it for himself. Obviously, Jesus was divine, but also fully human. He was the ultimate Son of Man to be our representative. So he picks up that kind of theme again here. He'll be handed over to the ruling priests and religious scholars, and they will condemn him to death and hand him over to the Romans. And they will mock him, they will spit in his face, they will torture him, kill him. But 3 days later, he will rise again. I find this next passage amazing now, don't you? In the light of what Jesus has just said to his disciples about what's going to happen to him, James and John, the magic roundabout boys, remember? Have you got that one? So, the sons of Zebedee. Yeah, the magic roundabout boys, I like to call them. They've just listened to Jesus talking about this, and suddenly, you know, they say, Jesus, can you do us a favor? You know, not a sort of favor like, well, I lent you 10 quid last week. What sort of favor do you want now? It's amazing that they come up with this kind of request. Jacob and John, sons of Zebedee, they approached Jesus and said, Teacher, will you do us a favor? What is it you want to ask me to do? He said, We want to sit next to you when you come into your glory. And they said, One at your right hand and the other at your left. Jesus said to them, You don't have a clue what you're asking for. Are you prepared to drink from the cup of suffering that I'm about to drink? And are you able to endure the baptism into death that I'm about to experience? They said, Yeah, we are able. Jesus said to them, You will certainly drink from the cup of my suffering and be immersed into my death, but to have you sit in the position of highest honor is not mine to decide. It's reserved for those whom grace has prepared for them to have it. Now, the other 10 disciples overheard this and they became angry and began to criticize James and John. This guy on the Passion Translation uses Jacob here, but don't get confused. The same person. James and John, Jacob and John. Jesus gathered them all together and said to them, Those recognized as rulers of the people and those who are in top leadership positions rule oppressively over their subjects. But this is not the example you are to follow. You are to lead by a different model. If you want to be the greatest one, then live as one called to serve others. That's our sort of theme for today that's on the front of your notice sheets there. You're to lead by a different model. If you want to be the greatest, Jesus says, this is like upside down thinking to the world, you see. If you want to be the greatest, it's not about getting into positions of power and authority and dominating people. Jesus says, if you want to be the greatest, live as one called to serve others. The path to promotion and prominence comes by having the heart of a doulos. That's the original word there. Bond slave who serves everyone. For even the Son of Man did not come expecting to be served by everyone, but to serve everyone and to give his life as a ransom price in exchange for the salvation of many. Now, all the way through this last few chapters, and particularly this chapter 10, the underlying theme here is of what does it mean to follow Jesus? What does it mean to be a disciple of Jesus? You know, to get your bags and follow him. What does it mean? What does that look like in our lives? Jesus is off to Jerusalem. He's off to turn these world power systems upside down. He's going to turn the whole value system that these authorities have, the Jewish authorities, the Roman authorities have, and he's going to turn it all upside down. His kingdom is an upside down kingdom. It's different to the way the world often runs things. And Jesus is off to Jerusalem to do that. And he said, come on, come with me, follow me. We're on a road together. I don't know, have you started that road yet? That journey with Jesus. I mean, it behoves us sometimes just to stop and just to take that in, because people do come to church, people do get connected with our church community here and family. Through the week, we often have hundreds of people coming in different ways. And we sometimes assume things about certain people, don't we? But I wonder, just let me put you on the spot this morning, have you started that journey? I'm not asking you, are you an expert? But have you started on that road, that journey with Jesus? Because that's the best road to be on. It's a road that sometimes leads to some strange things. And for these guys here, you know, it was not going to be an easy road ahead. But it's the road to be on, to be following with Jesus and learning and listening to him. And these guys were on this road to Jerusalem. And he makes it clear to them what's going to be involved. And that's important. You know, sometimes when we invite people on the journey to be disciples of Jesus, we sometimes skip over some of the the bits that perhaps, you know, are hard. Yeah, there's a lot of good things about following Christ. It's the best life. It's the life that means that you have a sense of real purpose. But it doesn't mean, just because you've become a Christian, it doesn't mean that everything is going to be hunky-dory for the next 60 or 70 years. We will go through pain. We will go through suffering. We're not immune to what life kicks up at us in terms of all the things around. But it's the road to be on. It's the best road to be on because it's with him. Jacob and John hear what is ahead, and I think, let's be fair to James and John here, I don't think they'd quite sussed out, along with the rest of the disciples, they hadn't quite worked out what actually lay ahead here. Jesus is trying to make it clear, look, there's going to be tough times here, I'm going to be handed over, they're going to torture me, they're going to do all kinds of things to me, they're going to even kill me. And then James and John say, look, can you do us a favor? We want to be, you know, next to you when you come into your glory. I'm sure for many of these disciples, even at this stage, they hadn't quite worked out what Jesus was up to here. And they had this kind of messianic expectation that somehow Jesus was going to ride into Jerusalem, he was going to upturn all of the political systems, and he was suddenly going to be placed on some position of power and importance, a bit like sort of, I suppose, the Roman leaders and the synagogue leaders and all these things. He would be in a position of power in Jerusalem to be able to change things, to change society there. And they wanted to be part of that. They wanted him, you know, when Jesus was sitting on those thrones at the front of all the gatherings, they wanted to be there. Now, let's just stop for a minute and let's not be too quick to jump on James and John here, Jacob and John. They were ambitious. They were ambitious, weren't they? And ambition in itself is not a bad thing, is it? I mean, are you ambitious? Are you? Are you ambitious for things? Or are you just sort of absolutely content with your life as it is at the moment? I mean, there's a good thing about being content, isn't there? Paul talks about being content in situations. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm not telling us now we need to be striving all the time for more and more and more and more and more. But are you ambitious in terms of, let's put it, in terms of the kingdom? Are you ambitious for this spiritual family here and this community? Are you ambitious for our life here, where we live, your street where you live, the community around where we live here, for the facilities we have here, for what is going on in our community? Are you ambitious for our community here? Do you want to see the best of it? You know, we don't have a theatre here, do we, in the village? We don't have a golf course. Oh, that would be great. You know, but when you go to some of these places, you know, when you go to Harrogate, or you go to Letchworth, or you go to some of these places where you think, wow, this is a fantastic place to visit here. And there's been care, there's been planning, there's been investment, and there's been money. But you think, wow, you know, why don't we have this in Hesketh Bank? Probably because we were just a farming community until about 30 years ago. But, you know, we're growing all the time. Don't you want to see great facilities here in our village? Do you? I do, because it blesses people, because it's part of, you know, thriving community. That's in our vision and values statement here. John and Jacob were ambitious, and I think we need to be ambitious about our community here. There's nothing wrong in being ambitious. They were perhaps slightly misguided in what they were thinking of. But maybe some of us here this morning, we need to be a little bit more ambitious. You know, we need to be thinking, we need some more entrepreneurs here. We're going to start some businesses that are going to make us lots of money. You say, Mark, that sounds really unspiritual. It's not unspiritual. We need people here who are going to have businesses that thrive, that employ people and stuff. We already have some of those, but we need more. You know, if we're going to impact this community here over the next 10, 20, 30, 50 years, we need to be investing in our community, don't we? And we can be at the forefront of that. I know there's local committees and all these other things that go on in Hesketh Bank and Tarleton, but we as a community as well, we can be spearheading some of those things. Let me just give you a little idea of just one thing that's come up, and this might relate to some of you, and you might think, I can get involved in that. You look through that window there. I don't know whether you've ever looked over the far side of our building here, but there's a shed that's falling down over there. Yeah? Peter Whiteside used to use it for his building things when this land first started here. If we leave it, it's going to fall down in about 3 years' time. But the basic structure is good. You know, you look at the roof, it's completely, you know, gone. You look inside, you think there's no hope for this building. But the basic structure is good. Now, a couple of months ago, I read an article about men in sheds. Do you remember those things? Age Concern started that about 12 years ago for men who are lonely, men who have no sense of purpose in their lives anymore when they get to 60, 65, 70. Maybe they've become widows. I want to see that as a men in sheds, don't you? We had a guy in this week who works in the local community here, visiting lonely men particularly. He visits at least 10 or 15. He said, if you started a project like that, I'd be able to turn up with 15 people tomorrow to go into that place. What we need is money to transform that. We need some volunteers who are going to say, I'll help you rebuild that. And let's get this project off the ground next year. That would be exciting, wouldn't it? This time next year, to look through that window and think, there's 15 guys in there, and their lives have been transformed because we did something about it. That's the kind of ambition I'm talking about here. Do you understand me? I'm sorry if I feel a bit passionate about it. I can't be doing with seeing situations, you know, where you think, we could make a difference here, but we need money. We need people to offer their services and get involved. And things. I mean, if that touches a little string with you or something, you think, you know what, I'd like to be involved in something like that. Come and see me, because I am useless at project management. I get ideas, but I need other people to help me see them through. Do you understand me? I had the idea, along with a couple of others, for Narnia those 2 years ago. But without Steve Lamin project managing that, we would never have had Narnia. Do you see? We need each other, don't we? It's all right having an idea, but we need people to get it through. So if you can, or you know some people who have some building experience and materials and stuff, or you can donate, you know, a couple of roofs for us or something like that, you know, help us. Let's do something practical this next 6 months, shall we? That can just really transform things in our community. These are the kind of ambitions that I have. And so James and John had ambitions. They were misguided, but don't write people off. I think that's one of the things that Linda and I were just talking about during the week. You know, you think about James and John and the other disciples, they were really upset with them. Hey, what are you doing? You know, wanting to be up there with Jesus and stuff and having these ambitions and stuff. And sometimes, you know, we can have wrong motivations. We can have wrong ideas and things, but don't write each other off. Yeah? Don't write each other off. There's always a way back, and be patient with each other. And that's important. I spent more time on that than I wanted to. But anyway, that's not a bad thing. So yes, yeah, so the other disciples hear about this, and then they start saying, they start criticizing them and things. It's very easy to criticize others, isn't it? Very easy. Now, oh, so-and-so did this and so-and-so did this. I mean, in our local community, if you look at the Facebook pages and stuff of what's going on in our community, there's all kinds of stuff going on, isn't there? People fighting each other, people wanting this, people wanting that, and sort of this discord and things. Wouldn't it be great to be known as a community here that has got a different way about them? Yes? A different spirit about the way we do things. We're not involved in criticizing. We're involved in construction. Hey, that's a good phrase, isn't it? Just made that one up there. Not criticizing, but construction. Building things up. That would be great. So let's just get to the meat of what we're doing here today. Jesus gathered them together. And he says, look, you know, because they're obviously thinking about leadership. They're thinking about this kind of idea of being in authority and being in control. And he says, look, those who are recognized as rulers of the people and those in top leadership positions rule oppressively. This was, of course, in Jesus' culture then. I'm not saying that all our politicians rule this way. They don't. But this is not the example you're to follow. You are to lead by a different model. If you want to be the greatest, live as one called to serve others. And this is what I just want to focus about just for this last, how are we doing? Nearly quarter to, just last few minutes. This has got to be the touchstone of our lives here. That we are known as people who serve others. It's got to be. Because that is the way of Jesus, isn't it? We are not here for our own ends. We are not here to blow our own trumpet. We are not here to magnify ourselves or build up our own resources and stuff like that. We are here as a community, a faith community, belonging to Jesus, and we are here to serve others. That has got to be the touchstone of everything that we do. And so that is a challenge. I find that a real challenge to me, because there's nothing more that I would like to do than to go on about 5 cruises each year. I would love to get an RV and travel across America for the next 3 years and see everywhere over there. There's nothing more that I'd like to do there every Monday morning, get up and think, which golf courses am I going to play this week? I would. I'm being honest with you. But my life can't be that. Because at the moment, I need to be serving other people. Now, it doesn't mean you can't ever go on holiday or you can't ever enjoy yourself or you can't. I'm not saying that, but you know what I'm saying, don't you? It's your priority and your focus, and the touchstone of what we do each week is not serving our own ambitions, it's serving the needs of other people. That's got to be what lies at the heart of what we do. And I just want to challenge us this morning in terms of, is that our attitude? Because I find, for me, that's not something that I make a decision about and then it's all, you know, downhill. I almost have to make that decision every day. Because otherwise, if I don't, I find I start getting resentful. Do you? There's things that you want to do, but you know there's people that you have to care for. There's people that you have responsibility for, that you look after at the moment. And you can't just abandon them. You can't just run off and do your own thing. You've got to prioritize who you're looking after and who you're caring for. And if I find for me, if I'm not careful, I get resentful. And then resentfulness then leads to bitterness. And bitterness then just starts to twist you up inside, doesn't it? You can see it on people's faces sometimes. There was a lady who came into church this week. I just looked at her, and you can almost tell on her face she is twisted up inside with something. I don't know what it is. But you can see it written on people's faces sometimes, that bitterness and that resentfulness sometimes. I don't want to become that kind of person, do you? I do not want to become one who is resentful of thinking, oh, I've got to do that again, I've got to do that again, you know. Maybe you have some jobs here. Maybe it's just putting the chairs out on a Sunday, or you're doing different things. Maybe you have some responsibilities. You think, oh, no, not again. Sunday morning, I'd much rather be doing something else. But in our minds, we can set our minds to say, hey, I get to put the chairs out today. I get to make the tea and coffee for everybody today. How good is that? You see what I'm saying? It's a mental attitude. It's where you have to reset your mind to say, yeah, I'm happy to serve. I'm happy to serve. Because that's the way of Jesus. Jesus came not to be served himself, but to serve and to give his life for others. And that's the simple message here, is it not, today? That's what we've been celebrating here. I know we don't all agree on all the things to do with war and all the stuff to do with that. It's a complicated situation and things. But at its heart here, what we're remembering are people who gave their lives for others to serve, isn't it? And that's what we're about. And that's what we're going to do now as we come to communion. Welcome back, everyone. Come on in. Johnny, you're going to just lead us in a song. And together we're going to take communion. Who's helping me today with communion? I can't remember. Warren and Sue, come on out and join me here. Who else is coming? Steve, Linda, thank you. We'll sing the song while we take communion. Is that all right? Yeah. Maureen, you wandering? Where are you wandering to, love? You over there? Hello, sweetheart. And there will be some people at the, I think Maureen's come out for the prayer. There'll be some other people as well, just to be able to pray with you. Don't forget those things that we mentioned earlier on. And and they'll be happy to serve you in that way. One of the things that Jesus mentioned when he was approached by those James and John, he was talking about a cup, wasn't he? Now, to the Jews, when they had their meals together and they had the Passover meal, there was four different cups that they used to use there. And Jesus uses this idea here, doesn't he? And saying, you know, this is my life, and inside my life at the moment there's going to be some suffering. I'm going to have to drink that suffering. I'm going to have to drink that. And sometimes you don't know what's in your life. Psalmist in the psalm says, my cup is running over. And he was blessed in so many ways, wasn't he? But for Jesus at this time, his cup, you know, he faced was one of suffering. And he said to the other disciples, didn't he, you're going to have to drink that as well. Peter, one of those disciples who Jesus was with at the time, wrote this later on. He said, since Jesus, though he was innocent, suffered in his flesh for you, now you also must be a prepared soldier to have that kind of mentality, determination, having the same mindset as Jesus. Every believer has received gifts So use them to serve one another as faithful stewards of the many-colored tapestry of God's grace.